Vertigo Films in black letters flashes up against white, blue, red and green backgrounds. Vertigo Films in association with Aramid Entertainment, Straightjacket Creations and EM Media. A Vertigo Films and 40H Films production. A film by Nicholas Winding Refn. With audio description by Roland Byrne.
My name's Charles Bronson. And all my life I've wanted to be famous.
The speaker is shaven-headed with a bushy, drooping moustache and is sitting alone on a stage in a theatre. Cut to Bronson in a grubby corridor with paint-peeling walls.
I knew I was made for better things. I had a calling. I just didn't know what as. I wasn't singing. Can't fucking act. Kind of running out of choices, really. Aren't we?
He grins broadly, but the smile doesn't reach his eyes. Heavily muscled, he walks in circles. Naked. In a cage. A boxer limbering up. He practices jabbing in slow motion. Bronson shadow boxes and stands in red glowing semi-darkness.
Baby, it's slow. When lights go low.
He does rapid press-ups.
There's no
and stretches and grimaces.
No.
He limbers up watching his own shadow on the wall. Armored police prepare to enter his cell. They open up and enter as a squad.
Baby, it's slow. When lights go low.
The officers stand around the cage containing Bronson. He's naked, filthy, and bloodied. The cage is opened. Officers in armor with batons enter the cage. Bronson fights them all, punching and kicking, taking at least one officer down before being held and crumbled. He headbutts the officer punching him, then finally goes down on his knees, raising a hand in surrender. He then charges out of the cage, but is bundled back inside and punched to the floor. He laughs at the officers, then is kicked in the face. He grimaces in pain, and the officers stand looking down at him. Bloody and filthy, he glares defiantly at the men in uniform. As he laughs in the spotlight, the title appears in large red letters. Bronson. He stares aggressively as the title fades. The screen goes black. A title informs, this film is based on a true story.
Right. How else can I explain it?
There are child's blocks and a toy soldier on the floor next to a wooden cot containing a yawning tot.
There was nothing wonky about my upbringing. My parents were decent, respectable and upstanding members of society. I went to school, I kept my head down. Sure, like most kids, I got into trouble. I liked it.
He's got another boy on the floor just punching him repeatedly in the face. He punches the teacher so hard the man falls off the table. He then lobs a desk at the downed schoolmaster.
Oh, Michael!
Mrs. Peterson, I really must talk to you about Michael.
But I wasn't bad. wasn't bad. And I still have my principles.
Peeled potatoes are poured into a bucket.
I took the first job I could get my hands on.
Thin fries, Peterson.
I suppose the crumpet wasn't bad.
Shaven-headed Michael's working in a chippy. His colleague, a brunette in pigtails, can't take her eyes off him. He steals money out of the till, hands her some, and puts a finger to his lips for her to keep quiet. He walks away as she puts the money in the pocket of her apron, then comes back and gives her a peck on the lips. Michael's mother answers the door to two policemen, who hand her an envelope.
Mrs. Peterson, we'd like to have a word with your son.
Michael!
He sits at a table with a grim expression, watched by the two cops.
Michael Peterson. Right.
Yeah, before I forget, I did come into this world as Michael Peterson, but I'll go out with my fighting name, Charlie Bronson.
He attacks the two policemen.
Which is my alter ego.
He bites a policeman's ear. Theatre Bronson smiles broadly, very pleased with himself. His smile fades abruptly. Cut to a view of the suburbs.
1974. Tough time to be young in England. Not a lot of opportunity around. Still, life moves on. Irene and I got hitched. It was all right. We didn't have it bad for a couple from the chippy. But they don't give you a star on the Walk of Fame for not bad, do they?
Irene's with their baby in a sparsely furnished terrace on Bluebell Hill Road. Michael's sawing something and hanging wallpaper.
Michael, what is that noise? For God's sake.
He's sawn the barrels off a shotgun. He holds the weapon, feeling the weight.
So, this is the post office I did over. This is what I got away with.
A few notes and some coins.
This is what they gave me.
7 years!
Don't worry, son. You won't do the 7. You'll be out in 4.
Michael raises his eyebrows and looks around the court in surprise. In prison, he sits with his fists clenched on the desktop on the opposite side of a partition to Irene at visiting time. She stares at him. He's not looking at her. He's let back into his cell. He stands staring blankly at a wall, then puts his face in his hands. To Michael in a suit and clown makeup with white gloves and a manic grin. He's in the theatre.
How's it going, anyway? Go on, how's it going? I've always fancied myself as being a comedian. For 7 years, it is a long time. Now, I'm not going to stand here, right, and tell you that prison is not bad. No! That would be misrepresenting myself, and I think enough of that has been done already! Don't you? No.
The theatre fades, and he's in chains.
You see, I didn't see a cell, a cage, a box. To me, it was a hotel room.
He trudges in circles around the bare cell with cream walls above chest height, darker paint below.
Don't get me wrong, for most people, prison is tough. a monotonous nightmare. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year of pure, unadulterated living, breathing hell.
He pauses, listening to the sounds coming from elsewhere.
But for me, prison was finally a place where I could sharpen my tools, hone my skills. It's like a battleground, isn't it? It was an opportunity and a place where soon every native was going to know my name.
Crossfade from narrator Bronson in the spotlight to Michael, now John, sitting grimly in a workshop with a sewing machine, not working. A supervisor approaches him.
What's the matter, Charlie? Do you want me to take you through it again?
No. We don't do work in long-term prisons.
It's vocational training. So you can get a job when you get...
Fuck off!
The supervisor leaves. Charlie sits at his machine and closes his eyes. He grins to himself. A squad of prison officers stride in.
What's the problem, Peterson?
Problem?
I said, what's the problem, Peterson?
I don't know, I don't have a problem.
He attacks the guards, making a grab for one of their batons and laying into them with it. He's bundled out of the workshop whilst being battered with truncheons. On another day, Charlie's in a shirt and sweater carrying a folder, accompanied by officers. A barred door's opened, and he grins as he strides down a corridor. Men behind bars are reaching out to shake his hand. He loves the attention. Charlie and his escort walk past other inmates and a guard holding a baton. Charlie smiles and chats to himself as he walks. He's shown into a cell in semi-darkness. He looks around the featureless room, then sits down on the bed. He tries to relax in his chains. Cut to Charlie in trousers and a white undershirt pushing a tea trolley. He stops by a uniformed guard.
Would you like a cup of tea, mate?
Thanks, Mickey. Love one.
Milk and sugar?
Please.
How many sugars?
Two.
One, two,
he pours the tea, then as he adds the milk, a door's opened and a slim man with glasses, smoking a cigarette, is let into the room.
Picture you upon my knee. Tea for two and two for tea, just me for you and you for me alone.
He takes a languid drag on his cigarette.
And would you like a cup of tea too, mate?
Nothing closer to my heart than a good cup of British char.
Milk and sugar?
No, I like it dark.
Charlie pours the tea and offers the cup.
That's an impressive set of guns you have there. You must be handy in a brawl. Bam, bam. Knockout. Ding, ding.
Charlie eyes the newcomer and clenches his fists. The smoker looks impressed.
Very nice. La, da,
da, da, Charlie holds his clenched fist yeah. pose as the stranger saunters around him. The scene fades to the theatre.
But time stopped for no man, ladies and germs, and my time was coming up. Parole!
Clown Bronson kicks the air.
And just when I was about to make a name to be reckoned with.
Oh, yeah? As what?
As what?
He points aggressively at the audience.
You don't want to be trapped inside with me, sunshine. Inside, I'm someone nobody wants to fuck with, do you understand?
He relaxes and slides a white-gloved hand into his trouser pocket.
I'm Charlie Bronson. I am Britain's most violent prisoner.
Grainy stills show Chairman attacking prison guards. He's lodged in the cage.
Prison was, honestly, brilliant! I liked it personally. Oh, fuck that. I loved it. It was exciting. It was on the edge. It was madness at its very best.
Still Chef Charlie fighting bloodily. A headline in the Sun reads, out of control, Home Office Dodge Inquiry. A headline in the Daily Mirror, chaos in jail. The Sun reads with, I always wanted to be famous.
The problem is, once you get comfortable, or sometimes even before, they ghost you again and again, moving you from prison to prison to prison. And I fucking hate that. Parkhurst, God bless that place. The accommodation was more than worthy of my royal self. Your own bed, toilet, a sink. The food was of exceptional standard.
Charlie's lying on the floor in a straitjacket covered in blood.
Oi. Yes, Parkhurst was a corker. And whole prison, well, what can I say? Well, worth a visit. Scrubs, not my favourite place to visit, but the staff are ready to make your stay as memorable as possible. We had a laugh. How we laugh.
Uniformed officers stand gripping batons. Shaky stills show Charlie fighting with a manic grin and a hand covered in blood. He's marched out of the prison yard and locked in cell after cell after cell. He's locked in the cage. The guards leave and lock the room. Charlie stands alone in the wire mesh box.
Got it wrong. Quite seriously wrong, actually. They sent me here. The funny farm.
He stands in a plain blue uniform in a room with flaking paint, staring. A guy in a white robe is crouched next to a bed, shitting into his hand. He stands, examining the turd, then sits thoughtfully on the edge of the bed. The guy stares at the mess in his hand, then with great thought, slowly and deliberately, starts to rub it into his face like makeup. Charlie watches, with dark bags under his eyes. An orderly enters a ward, wiping his hands on a towel. Charlie, in his underwear, takes a running swing at the guy's jaw. Charlie holds his hands up in surrender as he's surrounded and restrained. He's carried away down a high, echoing corridor. The scene fades, dissolving to a dark cell with a wire mesh door. An orderly approaches down the corridor, switching on the lights. He approaches the door. Charlie's lying on the bed, curled up in a white robe. Charlie flicks a V sign and the orderly walks away. Charlie sits up on the edge of the bed. Two orderlies enter the cell.
Right, Peterson. Now you've had a chance to cool down, I'll explain the Rampton rules. Rule number one, you do as you're told.
Charlie stares at him.
Rule number two.
This ain't prison. We're lion tamers here.
Charlie scratches his head disinterestedly.
Right, take these pills.
Stick them up your fucking arse. Yeah? Mm.
With a sigh, the orderlies turn and leave. Five orderlies wrestle Charlie, and one jabs a needle in his backside.
You fucking cunt! You fucking cunt!
Snot dribbles out of Charlie's nose as he fights the drug, but passes out. In a ballroom-sized recreation room, some people wander around. Others play catch with an orderly. One guy dances around, swiping at the air with a tennis racket. Charlie's slumped catatonic in a chair. There are sight screens either side of the room, a table with a game on, and a TV. One guy in a cardigan is strolling around. Another sits rocking agitatedly at a table. The guy in the cardigan turns, hands thrust in the cardigan's pockets, and strolls back in Charlie's direction. He sits in a chair next to the drug-addled fighter. Charlie tries to speak. The guy studies him. Charlie's eyes flicker, trying to focus.
Thing is, they don't understand. They'll never understand. And that scares them. So they keep you drugged up. What's that gonna change? Ain't gonna change the you inside. I think I know the truth. You're no more mad than I am. Yeah, it's all just made up. It's rubbish.
Drool bubbles on Charlie's lips and dribbles down his chin.
You. Me. Nine-year-old girl.
Charlie fights furiously for control.
It's a loveology.
The guy pats Charlie on the arm and wanders off. The scene dissolves to a wide shot of the rec room. One guy is thrashing about in a chair. Others mill around at the end of the room. They're dancing. The dancing becomes more animated as the music kicks in. Everyone dancing in their own way, some moving slowly, others beating time frenetically. Charlie stands uncertainly in the middle of the moving group and staggers through the dancers. He's wearing a loosely knotted tie and a jacket over his institution whites. Still doped up, he concentrates on making his way towards a door, with a security cage protecting him. Charlie lurches grimly across the room. Two white uniformed orderlies are guarding the cage door. One of them waves at Charlie and points him back towards the dance floor. Charlie turns uncertainly and heads back towards the dancers. He looks over his shoulder at the exit. The orderly encourages Charlie to keep going with a nod. For everything I want to do, no matter. Charlie slumps heavily into the chair. Close up on Charlie's upturned face. Daylight floods into Charlie's cell. He sits slumped in a chair in a check dressing gown. The scene fades to Bronson as narrator.
Fucking loonies, they're great, mate. But, well, they're fucking loonies, aren't they? And I had to get out somehow.
This was no hotel I wanted to stay at anymore. Being a celebrity and all, I needed to check out. And I had a good idea how to do it.
An orderly opens the cage door to the rec room and lets the cardigan guy in. He strolls casually across the large room. He ambles past a seated foursome playing catch with an orderly, past some cones around damaged floorboards, to some seats where people are listening to a record player. One of the listeners is Charlie. The cardigan guy sits, then turns to Charlie, who's doped up and cross-eyed. The guy tuts and wags an admonishing finger at Charlie, then sits facing front in his chair, with his back to Charlie. A tall guy in a dressing gown stands rocking beside the table with the record player. He's the one who smeared excrement on his face. Charlie focuses on him and the cardigan guy. With raised eyebrows, Charlie slides his tie out from under his whites. Charlie wraps the tie around the knuckles of his left hand, pulling it tight. The cardigan guy sits listening to the music. Charlie stands up and moves up behind cardigan guy, hidden by the curtains of a screen, until he puts the tie around the cardigan guy's throat and starts to throttle him. Charlie barely grimaces as he chokes the paedophile, pulling the man onto the floor to finish the job. As the man presses around, orderlies hurry over to intervene. They pull Charlie off cardigan and drag him away as another orderly checks the man's breathing and heartbeat. Charlie has his arms and legs stuck out in an attitude of unresisting crucifixion as he's dragged off. He sits in his cell on the chair. The scene fades to the theatre.
I will now reenact what I like to call What Happens When Murder Goes Wrong.
Bronson strides into the spotlight wearing a dark suit.
When do I go back?
One side of his head has been made up to look like he's a woman.
Now, Mr. Peterson, we aren't going to start up all that silliness again, are we?
He whips around to show his Bronson profile.
Listen, Nursey, I just want to know when my trial is and when I head back to the slammer. Right? Wrong, Mr. Peterson. Now, let's not play silly buggers, eh? I'll just have to pop you in the body with one of my special potions.
Mm.
was my trial!
No. Mr. White recovered, dear. There's no trial. Isn't that wonderful? However, you are being moved.
Bronson frowns with misgiving.
Where?
Yes, Mr. Peterson. Broadmoor Asylum for the criminally insane.
Bronson purses his lips angrily.
I deserve to go to prison for what I did.
I want my hotel room back!
Well, I'm sure you'll find yourself some solitary.
Two-character Bronson turns to the darkened auditorium and takes a bow.
And I did. 26 years. 26 years of solitary I've done, and I ain't killed no one! I'm not joking. Not a soul! Ever!
From the figure slumped in his cell, the scene dissolves once again to the theatre.
Well, I thought, if you're gonna be unfair with me, I'm gonna show you the ultimate in unfair takedowns. Now this is what I call Charlie versus Broadmoor.
Bronson turns to a screen at the back of the stage showing old news footage of a squad of armed guards marching, a man climbing onto a prison roof, and a hovering police helicopter. Bronson moves his arms as if conducting the scene. The prisoner in a hood covering his head rips tiles off the roof.
When I'm a rock and roll, when I'm a rock and roll, when I'm the rock and roll star.
Bronson mimes along to the song as the prisoner climbs the roof, sits astride a turret, and punches the air in triumph. Prisoners rip a metal air vent off the roof and toss it down on the officers, who hold shields above their heads. Water cannon are used on the rioting prisoners, and the prison building goes up in flames. The hooded prisoner sits on the roof with his arms spread wide, the orchestrator of the mayhem. Bronson performs the same gesture. Bronson finishes with a flourish for the ecstatic audience.
Well, that told me. Truth be told, though, they didn't want me in there anymore anyway. Apparently, I'd managed to cost the system tens of millions of pounds in damage, and Her Majesty no longer wanted to pleasure herself with Britain's most expensive prisoner. Oh, no, it's not the moniker that I was looking for. But what were they going to do? I mean, they couldn't let a loony run around for free. Oh, right. They had a dirty trick up their sleeve. They only went and certified me sane, didn't they? So before I knew it, I was back on the streets again. But Charlie B ain't no fucking pillow biter. Oh, no. So it was time to suck up the free air and see what the world had to offer me.
Bronson, holding a large poster version of a document stamped certified sane, gives a broad clown grin. Charlie, in a suit accompanied by two men, strides to collect his belongings. A comb, a wallet and a watch. A grim-faced officer stands by as Charlie puts the watch on with a flourish and grins at him. Charlie grins as he checks the contents of his wallet. With a serious look, shaven-headed Charlie picks up the comb.
Very funny, boys.
With a document box under his arm, Charlie performs a neat about face and walks away from the prison officers.
Right.
It's been a pleasure.
Carrying the documents in a small suitcase, Charlie walks away from the fading, colonnaded mansion housing institution towards his parents waiting by their car. His mum gives him a hug. His father won't forget him.
Did
Charlie and his father shake hands formally. The family's small saloon drives through a neat suburban neighbourhood and pulls up in the driveway of a brick bungalow. His father opens the glass front door as Charlie struggles to get out of the back of the car. His dad opens the door for him. Charlie slams the car door and heads indoors.
Come on in, son.
His mum's still wearing her coat as Charlie wipes his feet excessively.
That's right. I'll show you your room and then we'll have a nice cup of tea.
Charlie stands in the doorway looking around. His dad waits behind him.
Come on, son. That's right.
Charlie steps carefully across the carpet and spots a photo on the mantelpiece.
Oh, who is me? I was very small.
His father goes into the kitchen, picks up the kettle from the hob and fills it at the sink. Charlie sits on a bed with his mum.
Where's all my stuff?
Oh, we couldn't bring everything, Michael. That was Luton.
All of it?
Oh, we kept some.
Where's my bed? No, not this one. The other one I had when I was a child.
Couldn't keep everything, Michael. We don't have the room.
He sighs and looks away from his mum.
Well, is my bed still in Luton?
Luton. Never changes, does it? Now, my mum once said, stick with what you know. And I knew two things. I knew Luton. And I knew Uncle Jack. And Uncle Jack knew everyone. And anyone he didn't know wasn't worth knowing.
Charlie strides along a platform to get on a train. He settles in a compartment opposite a brunette with crimped hair and undoes his suit jacket.
Going on holiday?
No. Something better than that, I'm going to make a name for myself.
Are you doing what?
I'm going to kill the Queen.
So you're off to London, then?
No. Luton's, where is that?
He strides past a row of garages and arrives at an iron gate, which is locked. He looks around, thinking. A tall, square block of flats looms into the twilight sky. Charlie strides through the street-lit park surrounding the dingy block. He walks down a white-walled corridor, turns, and stops smartly outside a front door. Close-up, Charlie blinks, not sure what to do. He frowns, then pushes open the door. Charlie enters a dimly lit room. He grins broadly and raises a hand in friendly greeting.
Well, fuck me inside out. Come in, my dear boy, you're just in time for cocktails.
His uncle's in a silk dressing gown. The living room has heavy, deep red curtains. There's a slim transvestite, a heavily made-up androgynous creature, a woman smoking languidly, and a young woman in a red dress.
Luton calling.
Ladies and gentlemen in ladies' attire, allow me to present my favourite nephew, newly relieved of Her Majesty's pleasure, Mickey Peterson. Sit down, my dear boy.
He makes his way awkwardly to the sofa.
Miss Gorgeous here will get you a cocktail.
Michael, it's very exciting to meet you. Oh, Jackie, he says you're quite a celebrity on the inside.
Charlie nods and is handed a cocktail with umbrellas in it by the sparkly evening dress transvestite.
Complete turn off. Your face rug. Be like kissing a fanny.
Ooh. That's an upstanding set of moustaches. I admire your dedication. I always knew you had an artistic bent.
So, big boy. What does the future hold for Michael Peterson?
He considers the question and drums his fingers on his suitcase. He leans forward, helps himself to a pickled onion on a stick, then sits back.
Ambition is the virtue of all great men. He's going to stay here with us. All right, my pets?
Say the more the merrier.
For as long as you like.
Charlie slurps his fruit and umbrella-laden drink.
That's very strong. It's wonderful.
Uncle Jack always had his ear to the ground. And it turns out there was an old prison mate of mine in Luton too.
Charlie walks through the night. He enters a glitterball-spangled club and approaches the camp guy he served tea to.
Peterson.
The shulker.
Yes?
How long did you get?
10 years.
Fucking hell.
Make Mickey a cup of tea, please.
The guy, Paul, in a black polo neck and black leather gloves, smokes with studied indifference as Charlie waves friendly greetings.
Let's fuck.
They sit on opposite sides of a low, square table.
So, are you interested?
Of course I fucking am.
Well, you're looking good, Mickey. Fit. Strong. Powerful. You could make some money.
Serious money.
All you need's a name.
Sean Mickey Peterson.
No, you need a fighting name. Like a movie star.
Right. He thinks for a moment, then leans towards Paul.
Charlton Heston.
Look, love, nobody gives a toss about Charlton Heston, the man's a cunt. You're more the Charles Bronson type.
Charles Bronson?
Yes. Death wish. That's you down to a T, perfect. Charlie fucking Bronson.
Charlie nods, jutting his jaw, and Paul blows him a kiss. A dancer in white shoes and black stockings gyrates at a pole, running her hands up her topless torso. She works the pole as Charlie watches enthralled. A woman applies deep red varnish to a thumbnail. It's the girl who is in red, scantily dressed now in only a ripped-up T-shirt and knickers.
What are you looking at? I can feel you looking at me, Charlie.
On the sofa, Charlie's eyes bore into her as she stands with her back to him.
Do you want me to do your nails?
No.
She walks over and sits on his knee, then examines a scar on his head.
What's that for?
Fine.
That one?
Fine. Fine.
You're very muscly, aren't you? Mind if I hold your arm?
He raises an arm, flexing his bicep. She gives it a squeeze.
Oh, my God. It's huge.
You should,
What?
You shouldn't.
What, darling?
You shouldn't mess around with boys who are bigger than you.
Oh, really?
She kisses him. His arm quivers as she caresses his head and clothed body. Cut to a ruined barn. Charlie's in a bare-knuckle fight. Paul smokes, watching as an older guy gets the better of Charlie, then gets sent staggering. Charlie appeals for support from the small audience. His opponent kidney punches Charlie from behind, then knees him in the face. Paul registers a flicker of disappointment as Charlie stumbles on all fours. He gets up and rams his fist into his opponent's midriff and smashes him in the face. The last haymaker knocks the guy onto all fours. Charlie grabs his face and pounds it. The opponent rolls onto his back. Paul almost smiles. Charlie straddles the opponent and pisses on him, smiling happily.
£20, you're having a fucking laugh, ain't ya?
Oh, spare me the Oliver Twist routine, Charlie love. You need to build your audience.
I'll give you fucking magic in there.
Magic? You just pissed on a gypsy in the middle of fucking nowhere. It's hardly the hottest ticket in town, darling.
All right. When's the next one?
The next fight's in a dimly lit room with sawdust on the floor. Charlie's stripped to the waist, the light shining on his thickly muscled shoulders. Paul approaches him, places a piece of paper in his hand, and whispers smokily in his ear. Charlie kicks and punches onto the floor. One of them tries to get up, and Charlie kicks him disdainfully. Charlie turns to the small group of watching men and is approached from behind. He rounds on the would-be attacker with a challenging shrug of the shoulders. Paul watches nonchalantly. The double team get into Charlie again, and one of them grabs his arms as the other gut punches him. Charlie puts the guy pinning him with the back of his head, then kicks the other in the leg before going into his fists. The second guy comes in again, and nearly gets his head taken off. Paul glances at the guy next to him, and actually smiles. Charlie raises his arms in triumph. At night, Charlie and his girl are having sex. She's on top. The scene blends into another fight. Two handlers prepare to release a pair of fearsome dogs. An old brick industrial building is reflected in rippling water. Charlie stands in sunshine looking at the derelict factory. He's got a large cut on his head. Nearby, his girl stands and smokes. She looks worried as she exhales. Charlie's girl sits by the fake coal fire, flicking through a magazine. He sits on the sofa and watches her with a frown.
I love you.
She glances up at him.
What?
I love you.
He smiles. She goes back to her magazine.
It's been nice. I love Brian.
Charlie studies her with a straight face.
Who's Brian?
He's my boyfriend. And he's got a motorbike.
Brian.
Charlie enters a shop selling clocks, glassware and jewellery.
Yes, sir. Can I help you?
Yeah. I wanted to take a butcher's at that ring there.
That ring there, sir? That's a £1,000 ring, sir.
Right.
Fuck off! Fucking move!
I'll kill you. What?
Don't fucking move!
Don't call the police for 10 minutes.
I
won't. All right. Fifteen minutes. Happy Christmas.
He leaves the female shop assistant looking stunned and addresses his seasonal greeting to the man lying on the floor behind the counter. Charlie's girl in white stilettos and jeans sits with her feet up looking at her reflection. There's a vase of flowers by the mirror.
I've been thinking.
You're a very sweet man, Charlie.
About you.
Yeah, but you've got no ambition. You know what I mean?
He reaches into his pocket and pulls out the ring.
Boy, it is.
She walks slowly towards him and takes the diamond-encrusted band.
Thank you.
He nods, smiling happily. She looks less happy.
Ryan and me are getting married.
He exhales, deflated, his smile fading, groping for a response.
Right. Well, congratulations.
He gives his biggest Charlie grin. She smiles nervously.
See you later, Charlie.
He eyes her steadily, not moving.
Fucking charming. Onwards and upwards! What I always say. Everything happens for a reason, doesn't it?
Back at prison, Charlie's escorted out of a police prison transport van.
Yeah. Magic. Well, it turns out that lovely lady in the jewellery shop waited exactly 15 minutes. But it didn't take them 15 minutes to find me. We'd been expecting them.
Line of guards wait for him with batons. sunlight filters into Charlie's bare cell, which has the letters KCS daubed on the wall. Charlie paces up and down. A suit at a desk beneath a picture of the Queen studies documents.
Well, well, well. Charles Bronson, is it now? An American-Mongolian pop star.
Film star, sir. Death Wish. Bloody good as it happens.
Yeah, I'm sure, Weber. Sure, thank you. So, 69 days, was it? 69 days, all to yourself. Another of your prison records broken. So tell me, Charles Bronson, what exactly did you do with yourself for these 69 days?
I was building an empire. Huh?
You're ridiculous.
Charlie's eyes bore into the governor. Charlie lies in bed in blue trousers and a blue vest top. He's got a dragon tattoo on his bulging left bicep.
All right, Charlie. Something to read? Way after that, I've got another Jilly Cooper. Time to get on without Udera's wins, then. That's really good.
Charlie closes the door.
Shut your fucking mouth! Shut the fuck up, you cunt! Shut it!
Charlie turns to the closed door and shouts through the hatch.
Right! I've got a librarian up here. And he's in a lot of trouble. Well, I think you should send someone up to help him out, don't you?
Sit down.
Not down a fucking carter, you cunt!
The guard librarian moves from the end of the bed to the toilet. Charlie sits on the edge of the bed, leaning on his thighs, hands clasped together. The scared librarian looks at the floor. Charlie folds his arms.
What happens now? I don't know. Well, I guess we'll have to wait. We're all fucking way all day, we're going anywhere, we're not going anywhere, yeah. Fucking come on. What the fucking way? On the way.
Charlie waits with his eyes closed, then opens them as footsteps approach. The phone in the cell rings. Charlie unhurriedly gets up to answer it. He picks up and peers at the plastic push-button device, then picks up the receiver.
Hello?
Hello, Charlie. Can you hear me?
Of course I can fucking hear you. There's nothing wrong with my hearing, you cunt.
What is it, Charlie?
What is it, Charlie?
Well,
Andy Love. Oh, Andy Love.
Yeah. Right. I'm sat here with Andy Love. And I'm gonna snap his fucking neck and stick his head up his ass if I don't get what I want.
What do you want?
What do I want? What have you got?
Well, that's entirely up to you. Isn't it?
We're done. You can fuck off, Andy.
God, Andy looks horrified.
Family man.
Yeah. I got two kids.
Two kids.
What are you doing?
What am I doing? What does he fucking look like I'm doing, you can?
Look, let's talk.
And I'm done talking. Fucking pointless.
Wait
for what? Right! That's it!
What are you gonna do now?
What am I gonna do? I'm gonna put my fucking body paint on, that's what I'm gonna do. Get my body armor. Watch. Fuck it now. Let's have it. Go and get some of that rubbed on my back, you cunt.
Huh?
Get it on my fucking back now, rub it in, you slag! Go on, rub it in. That's right, we ain't got all day. Rub it right down my back, go on, down my back and my legs. Back of my legs, my arse, on my arse cheeks, on my arse. God, I've got it, my arse, you fucking homo! On it! Go on, son, quickly! Quicker, quicker! 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 Fuck off! Sit down! In the corner! Don't move, cunt! Now hang on to your feelings, alright? Because it's gonna get fucking hairy.
Come here!
Stark naked, Charlie stands before Andy, covered in grease, then turns, fists flying as guards burst into the cell. He's bundled away. The governor's let through a barred door and walks in slow motion down a drab-white corridor. Charlie's in a dark cell, wrapped in a smock, covered in blood, with a leather gag around his head.
All right, Charlie Robinson. I'll get straight to the point. We have been sailing rather close to the wind of late, and I detect a rocky patch. I had hoped that you coming onto the special unit with us might make you want to stop this hostage-taking business. This attacking of my officers.
We can handle this prick, sir.
Well, will you please take the rest of the afternoon off? Thank you. Be in my office at 6:15 sharp tomorrow morning. Thank you. Goodbye.
Yes, sir.
Look, I'm not in the habit of making deals with prisoners. For your recent escapade, you will be punished again. Block. If you have absolutely no interest whatsoever in yourself, then you leave us at a bit of a loss with regards what to do with you. What would you like us to do, Charlie Bronson?
Fuck off.
You're pitiful. You know that. And I can promise you this. If you further this mindless behaviour, if you continue to act in this nihilistic and godless fashion, you will die inside.
Charlie's eyes stare up at the governor from his mess of a face. The governor leaves and the cell door is closed. Charlie's shoulders sag and he closes his eyes. He hangs his head as the screen fades to black. A guy in a purple jumper dances up and down a wide flight of stairs, then slides down the banisters. Charlie's at a table in the art room, drawing.
What's that? Fine. Good for you.
Come on, it's a crime. Charlie, looking uncomfortable, studiously ignores the guy.
Not your art teacher for nothing, you know.
Charlie carries on with his cartoon-like artwork, then looks up in irritation as the purple jumper looks down at what he's doing.
Very interesting, Charlie. Hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting.
What does that mean?
What does interesting mean? Interesting's good.
Bravado!
You know? Yeah, you can't pin it down. Can't compute. You can't tie that up in a nice little pink bow.
Nah, you can't pin me down, mate.
Pajaros!
You fucking...
Birds, Charlie. I'm learning Spanish. Espanol.
Oh.
Olé.
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 A lot of birds in your work, Charlie.
Well, I don't really get to see much, too. A bit of birds and balls.
Pajaros.
Pajaros.
I know, mate. Here's an idea for you. Find that piece of you, Charles. That piece that doesn't belong here.
Fuck you, now.
The art teacher challenges him with a look, and Charlie holds his eye. He frowns thoughtfully. In his cell, Charlie's staring at a piece of A4 paper with a work in progress. He concentrates, selects a pencil, and draws. A picture of a cell door comes to life. The words Bronson number 1314 appear on the door to a cell in solitary. Inside, a drawing of mustachioed Charlie comes to animate in life. A pencil courtroom is yelling bedlam, and a little mouse twitches its nose. A little bird appears to run through the mouse's head. Birds fly over the mounds and line-drawn hills towards a red sun. In the cell, a twisted, bound, gagged Charlie is surrounded by birds and CCTV cameras. There's a pile of heads between his arms, and a head pulsates in his dog-like chest. A leering doctor creature observes. As Charlie is never in the cloister, his nightmare drone visions float around him.
Prisoner VT-1314 Bronson, sir!
Good afternoon, Bronson. Well? Mr. Danielson here tells me that you've been doing extraordinarily well in your creative endeavours. Champions of budding Magritte.
That's right, yeah.
Now,
you know we've been holding these artist materials for you, sent in by your cousin, Lorraine? Well, now that we're rather sadly having to consider the future of the arts facility, I don't see any reason why you shouldn't be allowed these materials now. Should help tremendously with your work. Mr. Danielson really has got great confidence in your cooperation, your responsibility, your ability to interact within the group. I strongly advise that you continue to follow this path. And I look forward to seeing some of this wonderful work I've heard so much about.
Governor, Charlie's actually brought something for you to have a look at now, if you'd like. Charlie.
Danielson has to struggle to prise the rolled-up artwork from Charlie's grip.
That's for you.
Thank you. If you give it to Weber, I'll be able to have a look at it later. Thank you.
Right then, Bronson, what are you waiting for, son? Let's go, move it! Move it! I said let's go, move it!
Charlie, in small, round, dark glasses, doesn't move, then slowly turns around.
Oh, sorry, Weber. That's for you, mate.
Weber takes the artwork with no gesture of thanks. Charlie sits on the art room steps.
He's a star fucker, that one.
I'll make sure he looks at that painting, mate. Don't you worry about that. Review the unit. Honest to God, though, Charlie, and I'll tell you this straight. I wouldn't be surprised if they start to discuss your release date. I mean, look, it's just my opinion. It's not necessarily the opinion of others, but, you know, if there's one thing I am a very good judge of character. Yep. You'll get a call, mate. You will. You know why? You're a brilliant artist. Bueno. Buenísimo. I'm so excited, mate. I'm proud as punch, because you're a fucking star. Gov's a cunt. He is. Fucking. Can't stand the wanker. Just keep your head down, and I'm absolutely positivo that we can do this. We can, mate.
What do you mean, we?
Wait, no, I'm just saying. No, Charles. Don't misunderstand me, mate. What I'm saying is, you are finally going to get what you've always wanted.
Charlie's expressionless behind his dark glasses.
What do you know about what I fucking want?
Danielson sits nervously on the steps at Charlie's feet. Charlie slowly surveys the art room. He very slowly turns his head back towards Danielson, who's staring at him.
What happened to my teeth, Phil?
Sorry, mate, I'm such a cunt, I completely forgot. Two for you. Two for me. And then I have a cup of tea.
Charlie puts a hand around Danielson's forehead and one over his mouth and pulls him over backwards. In the theatre, Johnson in the spotlight laps up the applause. He stands stock still, surveying the audience. He turns his back on the crowd, wipes a weary hand down his face, then leaves the stage. Charlie stands on the art room steps. He's naked and painted black. He stares towards the door at the top of the steps with an unfocused expression.
Charlie. What is it you want now?
Music.
I don't see how that's going to help the situation.
I'll fucking kill him! I swear it!
The governor pauses for thought.
Bennett. Get me some music on now, please.
Yes, go.
Surrounded by officers, the governor strokes his chin thoughtfully. Charlie's eyes glare whitely out of his blackened face. Officers in armour guard the stereo in the hallway outside the art room. Danielson's tied to a pillar at the bottom of the art room banisters. He's standing, draped in blue velvet. Blackened Charlie in dark glasses is standing in an alcove, holding a grimacing, oversized mask on a stick. His hand is bandaged, and he's fashioned a makeshift spear. The table is covered with art materials and items of artwork, including masks. The governor and his officers wait outside the art room. Charlie, now also sporting a bowler hat, works at the art bench. He's putting white paint on a brush. Danielson's got an apple stuck in his mouth. Charlie's put a mask on his face. It's tanned orange, with a curly moustache and dark eyebrows. Charlie puts the finishing touches to white, staring eyes. Out in the corridor, the governor and his team still wait. The governor thinks for a moment, then walks off. Blackened Charlie approaches his latest artwork. Charlie takes off the bowler hat and jams it on Danielson's head. He raises Danielson's chin with his fist, then takes off his dark glasses and puts them on the art teacher. Charlie steps back from his work with a look of satisfaction. He grins.
Oh, yeah. That's a fucking piece of me.
Danielson slowly moves his head to look at Charlie, who eyeballs him intensely. Taking a single blow himself. He battles hard before being pinned and battered by a tough-looking screw. The tough guard rains blows on Charlie's body and face as two others hold him. He collapses and is hauled to his feet for more. The tough guard grabs his face and lands one last knockout blow. The rest go in fists and battles. Narrator Bronson stares into the camera and gives a great big bushy moustache grin. The screen goes black. Titles read, Charles Bronson is Britain's most famous prisoner. He has spent 34 years in jail, 30 of them in solitary confinement. He has not yet been granted a release date. Beaten to a bloody pulp, Charlie's in a tiny, phone box-sized cage. He hauls himself upright, peering out of a small, square hatch. The screed of battered Charlie walks into a hallway and with another officer closes large wooden double doors. The tough guard passes through, closing the second door behind him. Bronson appears in big red letters on black, directed by Nicholas Winding Refn, starring Tom Hardy as Michael Peterson, a.k.a. Charles Bronson.